Accession number 20895, Reel 8.
John Deere Reel 8. The route followed by the reconnaissance party had not been cleared by British forces, and on our way we had the occasional skirmish with Germans in the woods. We had one of our party was wounded, and I think we arrived with about 15 or 20 prisoners. The other memory of this day is that the rest of the commando, indeed the rest of the brigade, had a pretty dreary day. They came by troop carrying vehicles, but they were on the road all day under following sort of very muddy tracks without food and so on. And they eventually arrived, joined up with us at somewhere around, I think, 1 o'clock in the morning, having been on the road virtually all day. And brigade commander was very anxious, naturally enough, to get into Osnabrück before daybreak. And so we were due to move off at 3 a.m. So by the time we had our men joined up with us, there was just enough time to provide a meal and brief them. Anyway, then we set off. Really, Osnabrück was a little bit of a... you can't call it an action. I know in B Troop, I know that they think we've fired a single shot, but A Troop had trouble. They had an officer and two or three others killed, but it was just a question of occupying the place. There was very little opposition. My only memory, in a sense, of Osnabrück is that the entry on the outskirts, I remember there was a very, very wide... It was more than a crossroads. I don't know how many roads joined up there, but it was a very, very wide open space. And I remember 20 years afterwards driving in Germany on holiday, arriving there, and it still seemed a very, very wide open space where these four or five roads joined together. I was following E Troop, and just before we got to that road junction, I heard some small arms fire, but some distance away. And when I got there, I found that there were a half dozen men from E Troop who had, as it were, hung back, had not followed the rest of the troop on. So I chivvied them on and sent them off. This was such a wide open space. As you can understand, whether you're moving in a tank or on foot, the one thing you hate in this sort of situation is wide open spaces. There was nothing, no cover whatsoever. We just had to go across it. And so I moved. I could see B Troop, the chaps just with me, were sort of looking at each other a bit. I moved out and stood more or less in the middle as far as I could. The men came with me. But to make sure that there wasn't anybody hanging up, I just stood there like a traffic policeman. I don't know if I actually went to the stage of putting my arms up and waving them forward like that, but I stood there with, I remember, the hairs on the back of my head prickling a little bit, but I was quite right. There was no enemy in fire there, and the troop moved over. Well, Osnabrück was of really little interest. On the, I think it was the 6th of April, thereabouts, the only other thing is Osnabrück, as so often happened. I think either later that day, or perhaps more likely later the following day, a mass of war correspondents descended on us, and they were anxious that we got into positions which could be called fighting positions, but these were all phony. And I remember, in fact, telling the director of the Royal Marines Museum when he was showing me around the museum many years ago, he was very proud of a large photograph of Marine commandos in a fighting position. And I said, well, that's Marine so-and-so and Lance and Corporal so-and-so. And that was staged 24 hours after the fighting finished. I gather the picture's now been removed. Sixth of April, we left Osnabrück. I think that was the date, for a place called Stolzenau, on the River Weser. We had been detached from the brigade and came directly under command, 11th Armored Division, to do a river crossing of the Weser River. What had happened here is that the rifle brigade had secured a small bridgehead, about I think company strength, and we were then required to cross the river and take a small town called Lisa, which well, once taken would provide good cover for the engineers building a bridge. We arrived at Stolzenau, debussed, and then moved down through the village, coming under fire, first of all, by 20-millimeter cannon fire whipping over our heads, then down to the river's edge where the poor sappers were starting to build a bailey bridge, and coming under artillery fire. And as we got there, we also came under artillery fire while we were crossing the river, but I'm not aware of any casualties. Once we were the other side, we then began to our advance with, I think, D troop leading, followed by A, and then C, and B, and E. I know B and E were at the rear. We were advancing initially, after leaving the rifle brigade bridgehead, along the river bank. There was just enough room between the water and the beginning of the bank for one to move along on foot, keeping below the bank itself. The reason for this is that about 300 yards away from the river was a railway line on an embankment, and there were German positions on the embankment, and they overlooked the ground between the embankment and the river. There were also a few German positions in that area of ground between the embankment and the river. And it was a very unpleasant move. We went along with the leading troop, first A troop, first Dog D troop, and then A troop, having literally, on one of those rare occasions, hand-to-hand fighting with the Germans. We'd been told that the enemy forces in this area were pioneer corps men. In fact, they turned out to be the training battalion of the 12th SS Panzer Division. The prisoners we took were very young, but they were clearly being well organized by experienced men, and only a small number faced us immediately, but they were well handled, and it was a very difficult time for us, moving along that river bank. The sappers building the bridge not only came under artillery fire, but we had one of the, at this stage of the war, was a very rare appearance by the Luftwaffe, even including Stukas. And these bombed the unfortunate sappers, who took quite heavy casualties on the bridge. And we were also attacked by machine gun fire from the Stukas. I can still see that there may have only been one, but there was one very definite machine gun attack by a Stuka. I have a clear recollection in my mind of the Stuka coming towards us. He was moving slightly, trying to regain control after his dive bombing, and he fired, I should think, about 10 yards away from us. I can remember now the thrash bullets in the river, fortunately, and not at us. We if you remember, would know if you understand it. We were lined up along the line of the river. So if his aim had been that much better, he would have been very successful in bumping a lot of us off. That was unpleasant. As we moved along, I remember passing one troop who had been told to give way to the troops behind us, and there was a young man there called
It might come to you later.
I got it in the book there. I can get it later.
It's all right. Probably come.
A young officer. And as I was crouching on the bank, we heard voices from the direction of the Germans. And I heard him say, they want to surrender. And he leapt to his feet, took off his beret, and waved it in a sort of, come on, gesture. And there were two cracks, and Casper, I can remember his name now, I've forgotten his Christian name, Peter Casper, fell dead at my feet. I've many times, getting over it now, I suppose, but many times blame myself for not having stopped him from being so foolish, but it was so sad to see a young life lost in that way. Eventually, as B Troop moved along after this unfortunate incident, sad incident, Alf Blake was crouching under the bank with a map on his knee, and he called out to me, Johnny, I've got a job for you. And I remember there was a feeling of relief because I had becoming more and more, nervous at this method of going along, crouching along on the bank and being shot at and not being able to put one's head above the bank sort of thing. Anyway, Alf pointed out to me on the map that a little bit further along, 100 yards or so, there was a stream and he wanted me to go up that stream and see if I could get onto the railway embankment, which at that point was nearer to the river than where we were. So we moved off and we were clear of the rest of the unit. We seemed to be clear of enemy firing. We came to a small streamlet, not the one I was aiming at, but a small streamlet, which meant that there was a break in the bank. And as the first chap and B Troop moved across this, there was a burst of machine gun fire, which missed him. But clearly, we were in view. But somebody, it may have been Bob Aylett, who was so good at these things, spotted the machine gun fire. And this is one of those rare occasions where I can remember the two-inch mortar being really usefully used, because we were able to put him onto the area, and he put three or four bombs down, and we got across the rest of the gap without any problems. Then we found the river, found the stream, got into position at the mouth of the stream, and I think it was Eric MacDonald was told to take his section up the stream, but not to go beyond the line of the trees in the stream. In other words, he would halt short of the embankment. And then Alf Blake had given me half a the troop, half of E Troop, to go with me, and they'd been following along behind B Troop, and I turned around and was surprised to see that Ian Beadle had come with them. Ian was acting as second in command as well as still commanding E Troop. So he and I decided to move up the stream bed, following behind Eric MacDonald's section, and then take a decision on what we would do after that. We started to go up the stream bed, but being idle, we found it rather hard work. And so we decided to move out of the bed of the stream and move up alongside the stream, which was easier going. As we pulled out of the stream, I saw about 200 yards away two Germans coming down towards us. Having my carbine in my hand, not slung, it was quickly up, and two shots fired, and to my delight, one German fell, and the other disappeared. We continued, and then met up with Eric MacDonald. And then we decided, I can't remember exactly now quite what it was, that we would seek further instructions from Alf Blake before we committed ourselves to the embankment. Ian did this, and then said that, told me that Alf said we should withdraw to the our position on the riverbank where the stream met the main river Weser, and hold on there. We did this and came under fire later on, nothing other than fire from about 300 or 400 yards away. We withdrew that night under instructions, because we were told that the rest of the brigade was coming over and to make more of an effort available to capture Lys. We eventually withdrew, as far as I'm talking of Beetroot now, back to the bridgehead position, where we were to take over from the Rifle Brigade platoon, I think it was, that was holding that flank position. The Rifle Brigade officer told me that he had an outpost position some 100, 150 yards in advance of where we were, and that this position guarded his left flank. This, by now, was probably about 1 o'clock or so in the morning of the 7th, 8th of April. I sent Eric MacDonald and his section to take over the outpost position and use the rest of the troop, Graham Partington and his section, and troop headquarters and the support section, to have a position with our right flank on the river. Not long after the Eric MacDonald had gone off, there was some sounds of small arms fire, and a few shots appeared to come in my direction, rather overhead. And then heavier fire in the direction of where I assumed Eric MacDonald was with his relieving the outpost. I was worried now that if the Germans were attacking, and the fire I could hear was certainly not an isolated series of shots, we were not dug in. There were more of us than there were of the Rifle Brigade men there, and if the Germans broke through us, they would be right on top of the engineers on the bridge. I could not call for artillery fire because we were, as I said, not dug in, and I was worried about the defence of the bridge. So I called, my men by this time were beginning to dig in, I called out to them, they were all within voice control, to stop digging and take up fire positions and be prepared for the attack. Almost as soon as I had given this shout, I heard the men in my forward position, not at the outpost, but in the position near me, open fire, and saw some figures rushing towards us. Then there was some shouting, and the firing stopped. I moved forward and found that we had been firing at the Rifle Brigade men who'd been relieved at the outpost position. There seemed to be two or three casualties. There was no time to discuss what happened because they were picked up by their own comrades and taken off, taken away. I won't go into any detail on the position, how it happened. One of the, I think, factors involved here was that the Rifle Brigade men wore greatcoats, which we never did, but the Germans we were meeting at this stage of the war were almost always in greatcoats. And I think, given the fact that I'd given the warning of a possible attack, these figures appearing at speed in greatcoats, it was very understandable that we had open fire. The rest of the night passed peacefully, and we were there another day in this area until the rest brigade came over. The only thing I remember at this stage was we came under, like the bridge builders, the sappers, under artillery fire still, and there was, in the buildings in the bridgeheads division, a sort of farmhouse, I think, there was an outbuilding which had a lavatory with the normal facilities of a seat and water flushing. The only drawback was there was no door, which didn't matter, there were no ladies present, and the lavatory, in fact, faced the enemy positions. Even so, it did prove to be very popular and was in use. From the Weser, our next move, and there may have been an intervening stop at some position here, I really can't remember, was on the 10th of April when we were to make a night crossing of the Aller River. this was to be the usual sort of brigade move. We would follow a white tape. There was a railway bridge still standing, although the road bridge was under attack at the time we were moving up to the area. The road bridge was intact, but there was also a railway bridge further down, and the brigade commander decided to cross the river by the railway bridge, with three commando leading, followed by 4, 5, and then six, I think 46 commando, and attack the road bridge from the west. There was little known about the enemy positions other than those on our side of the river still who were guarding the road bridge. We formed up in the station area and three commanders set off. The railway bridge was blown in their face, but they rushed across the remains of the bridge and secured the small bridgehead. The explosion had been not fully successful. There were still moderately easy ways of getting across the bridge, and we followed on and then took up a position we crossed through a wood, then a road, into another wood, and then, as it were, faced to our left towards a place called Haddamstorf. This was the commander position to safeguard the attack on the enemy in the direction of the road bridge. There were enemy in Haddamstorf, and our position was to make sure that they did not interfere with the 6th commando attack on the road bridge area. B Troop was on the left flank. I had a section of Vickers machine guns given to me to increase my firepower. There was a gap between our position and the river. There was also a short gap between myself and the troop on my right, which was E Troop under Ian Beadle. There was little of interest there. There certainly meant no enemy there. Three commander having dealt with the people who were guarding the railway bridge. In the early hours of the morning, which I suppose must have been the 11th of April, a group of Germans were seen heading, I think it must have been, to relieve the position on the railway bridge, which of course had been overrun. They were not posing any threat to me, but I felt I couldn't let them get, as it were, behind me into the woods. So the Vickers guns were told to fire at them, which they did. The survivors ran back into Haddamstorf, and the enemy in Haddamstorf now knew that there were British troops on their side of the river. Sometime later in the morning, Ian Beadle came to see me and said that he was worried about this gap between his troop and my troop, as there was a wood leading from Heremstorf in the direction of that gap, and he was, if I was agreeable, he would get the artillery to note this as an emergency shoot, and he and I moved back into the gap, as it were, to have a look at the actual position. We stood side by side a tree, looking in the direction of the wood, which was of some concern to Ian. The tree we were standing beside was a sapling, I should think about 6 inches wide, as it were. And we had not been there more than a minute or two when there was a smack and a crack, or rather a crack and a smack, as a bullet struck the sapling between our two heads, and we both ducked down and continued our reconnaissance rather more carefully. Obviously, we'd forgotten or hadn't thought of using our camouflage nets, which we always carried, and our pale faces must have shown against the dark background of the trees. It was a good shot, but instead of getting one or two targets, he didn't get either of us. Anyway, that was the incident. We called for an artillery shoot. It was registered. We had, at this stage, the Mountain Regiment of the 52nd Mountain Division firing their little screw guns, which were absolutely wonderful. They were so accurate, and we were very, very fond of them. The movement behind us, 6th Commander had done a bayonet charge. We all heard that shout of that on the bridge, which was unfortunately blown before they arrived. But we were now drawn back to a more defensive position around to make a more solidly prepared bridgehead while the sappers got to work. And so we withdrew back nearer to the direction of the bridgehead. There was an attack by the Germans shortly after we arrived in that area. I was not, the B troop was not particularly involved with this. It seemed to affect other troops more than us. And after that had been broken off, I was sent for and told that I was to take my troop back across the river and guard the railway bridge, which was not entirely demolished, to make sure that the enemy did not use the railway bridge in reverse to and so attack the build-up of forces on our side of the river. Alf Blake and I had served together in the 1st Battalion Royal Marines, and Alf had in fact, although some 6 or 7 years older than I was, had in fact succeeded me as adjutant of that battalion. But this was the only time I ever presumed on our previous relationship, and I begged not to be sent back. But Alf was quite adamant, and back we went and spent a miserable couple of days sitting round this railway bridge with no movement at all. The rest of the commander had some problems, and the C troop commander was killed, and they had other casualties while we were idling away guarding this railway bridge. However, later we joined up with the brigade, and we then moved off to Lüneburg on about the 19th of April. Lüneburg was one of those rare places, a German town that apparently had not been bombed, and it was quite undamaged. It had been used as a hospital area, and there were still a number of German wounded moving around the town. Here we had a few days of idleness, no particular interest, and then we were briefed on the next operation, which was the crossing of the Elbe. The only item of interest before that crossing itself was that because of the problems in the marshalling area, I can't forget what these were now, but it was rather complex business. All the troop commanders were taken on a reconnaissance 24 hours beforehand. under strict instructions not to take any action that would alert the enemy. And we went there and, in fact, found that we were very much harassed by the enemy in the shape of a German bull that chased us.